GNC570. It's Monday, April 26th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a very proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Here, when I'm here in the heartland of Texas, got a great show for you. It's really pretty early, still daylight out, which is kind of odd for me to do a show, but got a great one for you. Strap in. Here it comes.
All right, people, I need a go-no-go for the Geek News Central podcast. Digital archive recorders.
We're go fly.
Microphone.
We're go fly.
Video feed.
Go.
Web browser.
Go.
RSS data stream aggregator.
Go fly.
Interflux Toddism suppressor.
All right, I'm confused.
Host readiness check.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
The Geek News Central podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to go. Cue Todd in...
5.
Button, who's got the button?
4.
There is no cause for alarm.
3.
Everybody hold on to something.
2.
Just press the button.
1.
It's showtime.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from the Central Texas via the portable Geek News Central studio. Hey, everyone, welcome to the show, and wow, here I am back in Texas, and... It was just like I left it a few weeks ago. Seems like I've been spending a lot of time here in Texas, but this time I'm in the Austin area for, well, at least one day tomorrow, and then I blast out and I go to Houston, and then who knows, it's going to be kind of a crazy schedule here. But I've gotten a couple of calls already for those of you that want to meet up with me. I'll try to get back with you tomorrow to see if we can make that happen. But I tell you, I got a great show lined up for you tonight. I got a lot of content to cover. Of course, a lot of going on in the tech news. But first of all, I guess I want to welcome all of the new listeners to the show. For those of you that are checking out the show for the very first time, I want to welcome you to Geek News Central. Of course, if you are checking us out on Ustream, normally this show is recorded from my studio in Honolulu. But today we are in a hotel room, and it is what it is. But I got great connectivity. I've got my clear 4G connection that's pushing the video. So hopefully that maintains its quality throughout the show. And but otherwise, everything's pretty much the same. Got all of my normal recording gear. So should have a great show for you. Get over to geeknewscentral.com. Check out all the great content over there. Of course, you can check our archive podcasts available via the podcast link on the website. And hey, subscribe to the show. You'll find links at the top of Geek News Central for Zune, for iTunes, a regular RSS feed, whether you subscribe to our audio or video feed, one or the other, which however you like to consume the show. And of course, you can catch us on YouTube as well. For those of you that have a Roku device, you can find me on the Roku. You can find us underneath currently our Blueberry channel. But in the coming weeks, or actually hopefully this week, we'll have the Tech Podcast channel up there on the Roku as well. So you can catch the video or audio content for all Tech Podcast member shows over there as well. Also, if you've got a Boxy, if you've hacked your Apple TV, you can catch us on the Boxy device. There's a app for Tech Podcast there. So we'll be coming to more devices throughout the year, and look forward to being able to get those devices launched and up and running. Of course, I want to give a warm welcome to the Ohana, those of you who are longtime listeners of the show. And for those of you that don't know what the Ohana means, Ohana is essentially a word Hawaiians use for family. It's the word for family. So we want to welcome all the Ohana to the show. And of course, listeners from 163 countries worldwide. Get signed up for our newsletter. Our newsletter contains all the content that I'll talk about during the show. Of course, listener-submitted content as well. So if you have comments on today's show or you have a issue, you can, of course, always contact us at geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com, and call our voicemail hotline 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Those comments get played at the end of the show, so you can do that at area code 619-342-7365. So, wow, lots of stuff going on, really. It's been a busy weekend. Saturday it was consumed with my lovely wife having me do yard duties, and we actually had a guy come in and bring in some new plants. We had this, I guess for a better word, a shrub. They had these thorns that were about that big. that I had hated since the time we'd moved into our house, and I finally had convinced her to cut that thing down and in place put some different types of bushes, and those went in over the weekend. And then Sunday was really kind of a day of getting things wrapped up and ready to fly out. Now, as those of you that are following me on Twitter at Geek News, of course, you can follow me at Twitter again, at Geek News is my Twitter name, or Geek News is my Twitter name. When I got on the airplane, United's got this great deal now. Basically, you get they'll upgrade you for free. And I was lucky enough to catch an upgrade, had selected my seats. And when I had went in and done the seat picking, they had put me in 2G. And I had said, well, I don't want to be in 2G. I'd rather be in 2F, because what that does is no one will ever have to crawl out over the top of me. So I'd picked 2F. And so, you know, it's always curious to see who comes on the airplane. And I have seen celebrities before get on the airplanes. And lo and behold, on walks on the airplane the character Richard from Lost. And no one else really seemed to know who he was. And, of course, I perked right up and was like, oh, look who's, you know, check this out. And where does he sit down? 2H. So if I had kept the seat that United had selected for me, I may have been able to do some casual chit-chat with Richard on the flight over. I was so pissed. And my good friend Ryan Ozawa, who runs the Lost Podcast Network, I immediately text him and I said, do you want me to say anything to Richard? And Ryan said, just, you know, tell him, you know, Ryan and Jen are going to miss the Lost team and miss him when they leave Hawaii at the end of the season. And so really, you know, you don't want to be this jerk. You don't want to be the guy that is like, oh, hey, how you doing? I love your you know, you just don't want to be that person. And so I waited, said nothing, and, you know, I just played it out, see how it was going to roll. And lo and behold, when we got into LAX for me to transfer airplanes, he was right behind me and actually getting for the exit, but they took a long time to get the door opened up. So I turned to him, I said, you know, I didn't want to be an ass during the flight. And I just said it that way, but I said, I just want to let you know I love the series. You know, love that you guys have been in Hawaii, and we're going to miss you guys dearly. My kids are not going to know what to do with their Tuesday evenings watching the show, and basically wishing best of luck for future endeavors. And we had a nice little conversation. I passed on Ryan and Jen's message as well, and he was cool, really cool about it. But, you know, it was kind of cool. This, you know, he's one of the main characters on the show, of course, and so I had had fun just having a small, it was maybe a 3-minute conversation. He was really cool, and I know that he uses an iPhone because I'd seen him using that during the flight. So, anyway, that was the end of, you know, that was my adventure in being able to talk with Richard from Lost on the flight out. So, anyway, you guys all know I'm going to be in Texas this week. I'm going to be in Albuquerque the following week. And so I'm basically actually going to fly home on Saturday, get home Saturday evening or afternoon, and then I do a quick turnaround and fly out Sunday. Long story on why I'm not just leaving Texas and going to Albuquerque, but it was just the way booking seemed to work out. But we're going to be giving a Roku away. Haven't decided exactly which day, but if you want a chance to win a Roku, make sure you send an email to geeknews@gmail.com. And let me know that you want to put Roku in the subject line, and we'll enter you for the giveaway. Of course, I believe it was Nicholas that won the last one last week, and we'll give another one. Of course, and I'll be out at Ford Motor Company on May 20th, a guest of theirs for a tour. We're going to be going out there for a single-day tour. Then I'm going to be driving out to see my mom after that. At some point here in the next, I actually got to log into the forums and see when I give this Lenovo ThinkCenter A63 away. So we're going to be giving that away at some point here in the very near future. I want to remind all of you that are fans of the show to make sure that you change your Wi-Fi SSID to geeknewscentral.com. That'll get your neighbors knowing that you're a fan of the show. And, of course, I want you to check out all the offers on the website. Now, what I want to do is encourage those of you that haven't considered it yet to sign up for my salary replacement plan by either signing up for a $2, $5, $10, or $20 a month plan. And we appreciate, you know, every one of you that have contributed on a monthly basis for my salary replacement plan. And yes, I will be getting out a Geek News Central Insider for those that are in. And if you have an artistic ability as well, we want you to encourage you to create products for the show, and be happy to endorse that. And of course, if you want to sell them and make up a little bit of a profit on your own, that's cool too. Just send me a little bit of a cut. That would be great. But those of you that do contribute to the show, we've got all kinds of cool stuff we give away, whether or not you're a silver contributor from a t-shirt or up to a platinum contributor where you get a polo shirt and some revenue share. So look forward to that. And those of you that want to send in a self-addressed stamp envelope to me, and the address will be in the newsletter tonight, to be able to get some stickers and swag sent back to you from the show, which is basically some cool stuff I've got there. All right, well, anyway, let's take care of a little business, make sure that we pay some bills. And again, I want to thank all of you for continuing to be subscribed to the show. I think the thing I want to really drive home is that the show has seen some pretty remarkable growth over the past year. There was a time when the show growth had kind of slowed down a little bit, but it is like a brand new, it's like every month we're gaining considerable numbers, and I'm watching really the stats system on a weekly basis to see where we're at, and we're continuing to see a great growth of the show, and I can only attest it to all of you that are sharing the link and the information. We actually had one of the listeners, one of the fans of the show, we'll talk about at the end tonight, and I don't have his name, so I hope that he will email me, but I had the best endorsement in a long time from a fan of the show, and I want to get a shout out to him for basically doing that and talking me up on another basically radio program. So we'll have that information at the end of the actual programming. But really, GoDaddy is really what helps keep the lights on and helps keep food on my family's table. If you're looking for a dedicated server, virtual dedicated server, shared hosting account, I want you to consider GoDaddy as that vendor to supply those needs. And really, by using my promo codes, you can save a lot of money. Now, GoDaddy is the world's number one domain register for a reason. They have great service, great prices, and again, using my unique promo codes, you can't go wrong. I renewed 43 domains last night, and normally you don't get a huge discount on renewals, but I was able to use my ComSale renewal code and saved about $70 on the total renewal package. And so if you use the promo code COMSALE on new or renewals of .coms, you'll save some money. Todd will save you 10% on non-domain orders. Geek5 will save you 15% on orders $20 or more. Aloha is a great one being used right now, $20 off any order of $75 or more. Of course, we've got $12.99 SSL certificates at GeekSSL12 is the code for that. And of course, the one that really helps me out, Todd20, is you'll save 20% on a one-year shared hosting account. Those are the best deals yet at GoDaddy.com, and please consider them for your online purchase needs when it comes to domain names, dedicated servers, virtual dedicated servers, and so forth. I've got some videos I want to share with you guys from them, but I got to get them encoded. They have got some pretty cool information type videos that they put together on some stuff that they've got going on, and they've only got them in a .mov format. They're really huge, so I'm going to get those converted over and let you guys check them out. I'll put them up on the GoDaddy promo code landing page at Geek News Central. You can find that in the second column of the website. And of course, when I travel, you guys know I travel a lot, and it's because I have to come for consulting, and sometimes you cannot avoid face-to-face meetings, but that doesn't stop me from using GoToMeeting. Really, it is an application that I use daily, whether I'm at home or on travel. Sometimes I basically do meetings with my team on a daily basis, or a meeting with a client. And with all the business that they've ginned up from NAB, I'm going to be very busy holding online planning meetings and getting customers onto the Roku and Boxy device, and we're pretty excited about that. And I have some big meetings coming up at the end of the week that could mean big things for Raw Voice. But really, using that tool, that online meeting tool, it really assures me that I know that when I meet with someone and I need to show them something, I know it's going to work. And for $49 a month, you can't go wrong. And as a listener of this show, you can get a free 30-day demo by going to gotomeeting.com/techpodcast. And really, the ability to be to not have to, you know, be worried about having a client trying to understand what you're trying to explain. They are able to see what you see on your computer screen, or vice versa. You can see their computer screen, and it works great. I got an email from a guy saying that he was actually using it in his website design. He was working with his web designer, and actually they were able to go in and using the markup tools, actually mark up things on his new website design that he didn't like. And this was just while they were still in the basically, I think, in building the template out in Photoshop. So he really wasn't even actually doing the cutting that the web developers do. So he was able to eliminate a lot of lost time and probably save himself that $49 for just simply, you know, being able to do that online conference code or online conference with his web developer, which was pretty cool. So again, gotomeeting.com/techpodcast for your free 30-day trial. Don't forget about our free magazine offers as well on the website, and your guys' support of the show is greatly appreciated. All right, got a lot of stuff to get into tonight here. Let me make sure I got all of the notes out that I wanted to get out. And, yep, looks like I do. Those of you on Ustream, hey, welcome to the show. And let me go ahead and bounce up here to the first article. Well, you know, Gizmodo got a lot of, you know, this thing has made national news. I had one of the major networks on just before I started the show, and they started talking about this story because the police, the California Rapid Enforcement Allied Computer Team, or REACT, kicked the door in on Jason Chen's home. He was, of course, the individual at Gizmodo that broke the iPhone 4 story. So after a couple of hours of being in his house, they walked out with all his computers and his business cards, and it was a pretty lengthy list of stuff that they took from his home. But the judge has issued the search warrant. It was basically the grounds of it. It was used as a means of committing a felony, so I guess they consider this a felony issue. And also the warrant was justified by it tends to show that a felony has been committed or that a particular person has committed a felony. This can't be good. And all I can say is I hope Gawker Media, who is the owner of Gizmodo, gets the lawyers going and helps this guy. But Gawker has done a legal response to the police, basically saying that, hey, this guy's a journalist and he is exempt from a search and seizure of his computers. Well, if you really think about this, you know, those rules for journalists only apply in protecting a source. And generally what would happen to would be that the police would subpoena records. But they don't agree. And some of the analysts on a variety of websites are saying the same thing. They're saying that this is potentially an actual felony could have occurred because of the amount of money that they spent on the getting the actual phone and a whole other things. But this could bring up an interesting court battle in which the folks over at TechDirt say, could Gizmodo's iPhone scoop settle whether bloggers count as journalists? And I don't know. I don't know if this is going to get to that level, based upon how the district attorney really interprets the what was accomplished here, what had happened, whether or not it falls within that journalistic protection, but should make everyone sit back and really think a little bit. Now, how much money they earned. They said that the advertising dollars they could have earned over the length of time that they were receiving such huge traffic could have been around $100,000. They figured it, initially their legal costs and everything they had into actually making sure they were okay from a legal perspective was $20,000. So, you know, Gizmodo is still 80K up, but all bets are off now. Especially if they go after this guy, and it should make people really think. And, you know, and if you have a, you know, if you acquire something like this and that way, you know, it's just, to me, I don't know. I still have a bad taste in my mouth and how it all went down. I don't think I'd have touched it with a 10-foot pole, you know, as desirable as it would be to break a story like that, definitely not worth having to go through the courts and everything that may be forthcoming from the district attorney there in California. Of course, no charges have been filed, and all they're doing with the subpoena is to gain evidence. And if I was the guy that sold that phone, I think I would be worried as well. So time will tell on this and how this falls out. But of course, Gizmodo got some more traffic today because they, you know, they posted the details of this up on their website and shown the subpoena. You know, they're going to get every dime out of this that they can. So we'll see. Hey, over on newtv.com, I guess the folks at YouTube were pretty blown away by the IPL projections. And I guess what IPL is it's a, or they actually list what is IPL tournament. I guess that's some sort of a, is it cricket or what actually event was it? It wasn't soccer. Yeah, it was a cricket. It was actually the IPL is a cricket league, and they basically live streamed all 60 matches of the 45-day IPL tournament on a dedicated YouTube channel at youtube.com/IPL. Now, I'm not a big cricket fan. I don't hardly understand how the game works, to be honest with you. But YouTube was thinking that they would see about 10 million views over the 45-day period, and it completely blew away all their expectations by getting 51 million views, including this previous weekend's championship match between the Mumbai Indians and the Chennai Super Kings. And YouTube is saying that the coverage of the Cricket League ranked as a top sports channel worldwide, surpassing global views of the NBA, NHL, ESPN, UFC for the same time period. So this is pretty exciting for YouTube. And I just wonder if at some point if they're going to open up more streaming channels. It looks like the place to be, definitely for sports. But I wonder how they actually monetize that at the same time, or if they actually had to license that from the IPL. But they were expecting about 10 million views and end up with 51. So what do you guys think? Do you think at some point YouTube is going to make a run at folks like Ustream, or if they're going to make available live streaming to their content creators over there? I tell you, it'd be a lot easier to definitely get videos like this up on the website, because what I have to go through is when I get done recording the show is I end up with a raw, basically a .avi file, and I have to compress that down into a .mp4. Generally, I put that up on Blip first. Once it's on Blip, then I actually do a distribution to a variety of sites, YouTube being one of them. But if I was could stream straight to YouTube or via YouTube, then the video could be captured right there, and boom, it would save me a step from that perspective. I don't know. I don't know if they're ever going to make that available to the average Joe. I doubt it, because most streaming shows are longer than 10 minutes. Now, this show, fortunately, I have a director's account over there on YouTube, which allows me to really to put videos up to a terabyte, not terabyte, up to a gig. Is it a gig? No. How big is the file I'm up? Yeah, up to a gig is my maximum file size, and really no time limit, long as I keep the video to under a gig, and I think normally the video file size is about 800 to 900 megs that I upload to YouTube. The actual audio, the video file that you guys download in your RSS feed is a little bit different. It's formatted a little different, and it ends up being about 600 megs. So if you are downloading the video feed, make sure if you get done watching, you're going in and cleaning up the videos, because you're going to fill your devices up pretty fast. But, you know, it's just now it's about distribution. Of course, with us being on the Roku and Boxy, we're really excited about getting out there more. But definitely the bandwidth costs are continuing to go up for the video side. The audio stuff stays pretty flat. But what do you guys think? Think it's exciting if YouTube is going to allow people to start streaming on there or not? All right, over on the Apple blog, appleblog.com, they've got a pretty good article on 7 essential iPad productivity apps. And I'll be honest with you, two of these here, I really don't get. Maybe someone that uses these on a regular basis can tell me the advantage of it. Bento, you know, I guess I don't fully understand the true value of Bento and Evernote. I know some of you are big Evernote fans. I don't know. I don't use either one of those applications at all, but I don't bookmark a lot of pages either. You know, most of the stuff that I talk about is covered in my blog, and if I need to find something, I just do a Google search, or actually do a search on my blog and find it. But they go into some other iPad applications that are being recommended. The iWork Suite, I haven't used that one yet. GoodReader is one that will allow you to open up PDFs and Word docs and presentations and videos, so that's pretty cool. Things is a kind of like a to-do list or a task manager, which I did try, and that's a pretty good app as well. But anyway, got these lists of 7 essential iPad productivity apps. Have this link up in the show notes for you to check out, and you can try on your iPad if you have one. All right, over on GigaOM, those of you that have Android phones, you'd be happy to know that the App Store or number of apps available for the Android are nearing 50,000. And while the Apple App Store has as 4 times as many, I don't think at this point you guys are at a loss for having apps available to, you know, basically get you an additional functionality for Android. So those of you that are Android users, I'm kind of curious, what is your, you know, what do you guys have for like a top 5 list of apps that you use on your Android? And part of this is I'm kind of selfish because my sister has a Droid, so she's been asking me what app should I be loading, and being that I don't use one, I really don't have I'm not dialed in really well. So let me know what you guys consider your 5 top apps on the Android. We'll share that with the audience members. You can email me geeknews@gmail.com, but congratulations, we're just about reaching the 50,000 mark, and I think it's going to continue to climb based on some of the additional news I'm going to talk about tonight on the show. Now, I didn't get any feedback from any of you Mac users, but Dave Weiner over at scripting.com, he's on a little bit of a rampage here, and he's got a picture on his website with an on-off switch. We all know what an on-off switch is, right? All of our computers have on-off switches, and most of us have external monitors with on and off switches. But he continues to ask the Apple folks, is there any true way to turn, you know, the monitor off and keep it off instead of having it wake up all the time? So I don't know. What do you guys, for you Mac users, does it bother you, or maybe your computer's in a different room? But he says there's a lot of things that don't have on-off switch: scanner, router, modem, the iMac. I know that at my house, I have a lot of devices that are on, you know, you have to have a power converter. You take 110, reduces down to 5, 12, 18 volts, whatever the device takes. And when my office move happened, when I rerouted the reorganized the office, I was very took the time, probably an extra 3 or 4 hours, in getting everything laid out electrically so that By pressing three buttons, I can basically shut everything down in my office, all those extra little transformers. So when I'm not recording a show, I go click, click on two power strips, and that gets 90% of the stuff shut off. And then when I travel, I hit the third one, and that really gets me down to very minimal things. That leaves the router on, leaves the router and the thing hooks up to the cable and a couple other small devices so that the kids and wife can still be on the internet, but shuts. And what I've seen is a little bit of a drop in my power bill because since I've redone that, all those transformers aren't just sitting there drawing power all the time. So I think it's a good question. I think we all should look at it, and hopefully at some point they'll get much better in having smart power strips. That I know that they're starting to come out with them. They're very expensive at this point. None of them work perfect, but it's sure nice to have a power strip that would just say, okay, there's no amperage being drawn on this. Let me turn this switch off or this particular jack off. So Dave is asking, does your computer give you a clear and simple way to turn it off? And the question is, if not, should it? I think it's probably all of us on PCs can answer yes to that, but for Mac users, I don't know. Hey, the announcement came out today by the folks at Windows talking about the new Windows Home Server. There's a new basically a new beta available. It's called Veil. The new beta, again, codenamed Veil, is available. And basically, you can get access to the beta via the Microsoft Kinect site. This one here is giving some additional features like extending media streaming outside the home and office. As you guys know, Windows Home Server right now will only do within the network or behind a firewall. It already had multi-PC backup and restore, so I don't know why they're calling that a new feature. They do have some simplified setup and user experience, and they have expanded development and customization tools for partners. So those of you that have bought maybe an HP Windows Home Server or whichever device you may have bought, going to see an upgrade. Now, one thing that I am pretty excited about with Veil, they're moving to a underlying server platform that will only run it as a 64-bit operating system, and that's really good. So that means at some point I'm going to have to upgrade my Windows Home Server to 64-bit if I want to make the jump here, but this is very good. This is cool stuff, and I think what we're going to find is that this great app, basically this is going to be a great addition for all of us that run Windows Home Server to basically back up and maintain repositories for all of our machines. It's going to be good. I can't wait to see this actually on the street, and I'll make the jump and upgrade. How many of you have a hard time finding your car? How many, you know, in Hawaii, you know, it's pretty hard to lose your car because the malls aren't that big. But, you know, every once in a while, I think we've all got out of our vehicles absentmindedly, haven't looked at which, you know, row we're in, and you end up in a store or end up somewhere for a couple of hours. You come out and you're like, where did I park? And how many of you quite honestly can say, I lost my vehicle, and I don't know where it's at, and you had to walk for 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 minutes? I have. I'm truly a blonde at heart here. And, you know, ladies, don't take that the wrong way, but I can have my moments. So there's this great kit that are being sold now called AutoFinder. And, you know, how many of you have set your car alarm off or basically hit your alarm to make it squawk at you? Well, that's okay if you're within 10 or 20 feet, but AutoFinder, basically, it gives you a little fob and it beeps at you when you're, you know, it's you basically walk towards it. $80. So I got to consider if I want to buy one of these. And, you know, that only happens once in a while. So, you know, I probably wouldn't use it. But does anyone in your family notoriously lose where their car is, where it's parked? One thing that I've learned to do is I get out of the car, I take my iPhone, and I take a picture of the actual signboard that shows which floor and which lane I'm in. That's how I've how I use my phone to know where my car's parked. It's probably cheaper than this $88 device. But at least at this point, there is some options for those of you that have become completely absent-minded. All right, over on ArsTechnica.com, a Texas beauty school's phone jammer has led to a $25,000 fine. This is kind of interesting. A cosmetology school outside of Dallas needed had installed a 5-watt adjustable cell phone jammer, and they were really happy about no cell phones ringing in the classes, and they were pretty psyched about it until last week. The FCC has proposed a $25,000 fine against the company that is actually selling these products. The London-based PhoneJammer.com has been in the FCC's view since 2008, but the FCC doesn't like it very much when someone is jamming cellular signals. And what really tipped them off was that the FCC had received a complaint, apparently from AT&T, about cellular interference in the respective cell bands. And staff from the FCC's Texas field office tracked the problem down to the cosmetology school and found the 5-watt jammer on the presence. The jammer was then handed over to feds as a copy, as was a copy of an April 21st invoice sent from them. And they had shipped, the invoice had clearly showed a U.S. shipping address. And so it hadn't come from the U.K. It had actually been shipped from within the United States. And that is big no-no. So the company's lawyer had claimed that the phone jammer had not been shipped or distributed units to the United States. But I guess here in March of this year, there was another issue where one of these jammers was affecting police officers, and they tracked it down to a business in a city in Florida. So if you're running a jammer, or know of a company that's running one of these jammers, you may want to talk to them about this. While it doesn't appear the cosmetology school or the business that had one of these is going to get fined, this phone company, PhoneJammer.com, looks like they're going to be having a little bit of a, have to write a check to the FCC for the for damages there. All right, for those of you in the UK, of course, many of you worldwide are using GPS receivers that are being driven by the U.S. GPS constellation, but Europe's Galileo satellite navigation system has passed a major milestone. The payload for the first spacecraft in operational constellation leaves its Portsmouth, UK factory on Monday for final preparation in Italy. So I guess the model number one that is going to be launched later this year is, or actually late next launch next year, is the first of, I don't know how many they're actually going to put up. They don't say in the article, but looks like they're ready to go here. Model 2 is a few weeks behind, and I don't know how many. I think they have to get 3 or 4 units up before it actually will start giving accurate results. But anyway, this is where they're headed here, and at some point, European, the EU will have their own constellation and not basically limited by the whims of the U.S. System, which it'll be interesting to see how this all integrates with the current GPS system, if there's going to be interference or if you have to have different GPS receivers. I'm not exactly sure how this is going to fall out. Maybe someone that's familiar with it will know whether will GPS receivers work with the U.S. constellation and also the Galileo constellation at the same time, or will you have to have separate devices. But they're getting ready to ship the first satellite here again in the next few days. This next article over on the BBC, and I wish I had my ability to put up the live screen on my system here, but VidBlaster really doesn't allow me to do that, basically running two different computers here. But I have to really, I'm really surprised sometimes when I read articles about encryption and security, because scientists, man, they really get deep into this. And these guys, you know, God bless them. They really find holes to cryptologic keys and so forth. But I guess a pair of scientists have found that varying the voltage to key parts of a computer's processor gives them the ability to see data that they're not supposed to. Now, who would have ever thought that? It blows me away. But what they did was they basically rigged a laptop or a computer to be able to adjust the voltage level that was actually going to one data chip. And when it got to a certain point, then transistors started failing in the chip. And what happened was is it would spit back some sort of invalid response that they were able to capture. And this 1024-bit encryption they found then could be through that data they received from that corrupted data, about 100 hours to actually find the key. And when you're talking about a 1024-bit key being able to be hacked in 100 hours or busted in 100 hours, and again, that's just a limitation of the number of computers or processors being thrown at it to figure it out, that's pretty impressive. So part of the hardening, part of the ongoing process to harden the RSA algorithm now is building into these chips the basically the logic to stop them from reporting this data when the actual chips are failing or when they're, you know, they're being manipulated. So Intel said it expects to start producing chips with components 22 and 16 nanometers wide with some protection in there. So it's kind of interesting to see how that all boils out. But how these guys ever figured that out in the first place is beyond me. But makes you really sit back and think, wow, the lengths people will go to try to find really a way around to beat an encryption system. All right, those of you that are Windows users that have an iPad, be very careful out there, okay? Scammers are distributing emails designed to trick iPad owners into downloading software they think is an iTunes update, which turns out to be malware that opens a back door on the computer. Researchers warned on Monday. The emails have the subject line that says iPad software update. As you guys know, you never get an email from Apple saying that there's an update to the software. You are notified when you load iTunes, okay? And if you may have installed this by mistake, you can go over to the Bitdefender blog and download Bitdefender, and basically they'll help you get it out of your system. But it is a Trojan, and it's been identified as backdoor.bifrose.aady. So just a heads up out there, okay? Wow, the folks at CNET held no punches over the issue that McAfee had last week. You remember last week McAfee released a virus definition file update that took down, now they're saying, as many as 50,000 computers, basically made them inoperable where they had to be serviced by a technician. It was bad, but the post-analysis of this, and what actually happened was McAfee actually did a virus scan alert on the svchost.exe file, and without that file, Windows does not run. But they're being criticized for being slow to react and slow to respond and slow to get a fix out and really kind of denying that stuff was going on initially. So the apology did not arrive until late, and there was many, you know, major companies, hospitals, police stations, that really their systems were taken out. Supermarket chains, anyone that was doing, you know, automatic updates through a, you know, being distributed through a basically an auto update system through a IT push, it was bad. So there was, this is a very negative article. And basically the folks at CNET are saying, hey, you know, McAfee's not the only game in town. There are at least seven other companies out there that have, you know, comparable products that will work on IT infrastructure, you know, big systems that are, you know, equally as relevant in preventing the spread of viruses. And they were not at all boy, I have not seen this scathing of an article on a specific company in a long time, but the folks at CNET have made available other free and paid security options available at their security center, which you can check out. Was any of your companies, any of you guys have a issue with this? Was your company affected? Did any of your laptops get taken down? Did you hear of anybody within your divisions and so forth? Hey, please let me know. Hey, I got an email from one of our listeners that is basically listening to the show via a government computer. They say that right now it is not possible to listen to Geek News Central's audio file from geeknewscentral.com. Can any of you that are on .mil or .gov sites, can you guys validate that you're having the same issue? You're not able to get access to the media file? And if you can't, can you submit tickets to your IT infrastructure and ask why? I'm trying to narrow down to a better understanding of why the media file at Geek News Central is being blocked by this particular organization I got the information from. So if any of you can help me out there and just check it out, maybe not supposed to be downloading MP3 files on your machines, I don't know. But anybody can give me some feedback would be greatly appreciated. And what's triggering the banning. All right, over on Tech Dirt, there's a bill going through Congress right now that is designed to extend DMCA takedowns. The extension would allow us to request takedown of information that was tied to personal information. So in other words, if you went out on the internet, all of a sudden you found your social security number or some other private information, they haven't defined that yet, then individuals would be able to, through a DMCA takedown notice, get that information removed. And while I understand credit cards and driver's licenses and social security numbers should be able to be taken down, I think most sites today, if you see that type of data, they'll take that down voluntarily. But this bill introduced by Michigan Representative Thaddeus McCotter is really one of those bills that I don't know if it necessarily needs to go through, but it seems like right now we do have the ability to have, you know, personal information like that removed without having to have it be a law. But I don't know. Has anybody had problems having information, personal information, taken down? Now, telephone numbers and that type of stuff, which is included in this, that seems a little bit extreme to me. But I think information that would be like my date of birth, social security number, mother's maiden name, all those kind of items that would be tied together might be something that we'd want to have removed. What do you guys think? Geeknews@gmail.com, voicemail hotline 619-342-7365. Hey, those of you that are up on Ustream right now, how's the stream tonight? Is it holding tough? I'd like to hear you guys' feedback on it. We're pushing via the Clear connection tonight, so I'm kind of curious how that is, how's it holding tight. Next article up, well, New Zealand. Those of you down under in New Zealand, New Zealand is moving forward with their three strikes law, and we know that there's been a lot of work put into getting a three strikes law basically put in place down there that wasn't so bad, but the three strikes law, which really is now in effect, is basically going to start affecting individuals, and so I guess there's a lot of questions left answered down there. So I know we've got some listeners down in New Zealand. I'd love to hear you guys' feedback on really on what the talking points are about this bill. And people are asking, you know, all the questions we probably would ask here. Okay, about IP spoofing. What if someone got access into your hotspot? What if you have unsecured Wi-Fi? You know, there's all types of questions that need to be answered, which I don't think can be answered. But basically, if you are warned three times, you know, you could lose your internet access, which, you know, that's not even an effect here in the United States. So definitely some issues with this, just like other places where this is an effect. So I'd love to hear you guys' feedback on that. All right, the FCC has launched Spectrum Task Force, and it looks like the FCC is pretty serious here. They're going to be using the Spectrum Task Force to go through the frequency spectrum with a fine-tooth comb and be able to determine what can be freed up. This will go into their long-term spectrum planning and was definitely going to play a role in the execution of the spectrum recommendations that were released underneath the National Broadband Plan. Now, many of you that are still getting your TV signal over the air, I know you've written to me and have expressed concern that with the National Broadband Plan trying to, within 10 years, gain back another smidgen of frequency spectrum that is currently being used by broadcast channels. I know that many of you have criticized that, but you know, the fact of the matter is we're all a bunch of data junkies right now, and until there's you know, more spectrum freed up, it's going to be very difficult to, you know, add new services as time goes on. I'd like to see how TV go digital myself. It should, you know, they don't need to be transmitting TV over wires. It should be able to, they should be able to transmit TV over wires to everyone in the United States and remove the over air portion. But that's my personal feeling. All right, Sony has decided that, hey, floppy disk, it's their, they're giving it last rites. And they've announced that they are going to, as of March 2011, they're going to stop the sale of floppy disk. And, you know, how many of you still need a floppy disk from time to time? I know that using test gear and that type of stuff, many of those types of pieces of equipment require floppy disk to be used to record data. You know, many of these boxes are old, don't necessarily have a place to stick a USB stick in. But, you know, I don't think I've touched a 3.5-inch in a long time, probably 5 years or more. I know that I have a box of them just in case. I haven't thrown them out. I don't know why. None of my computers have a 3.5-inch floppy in it. Are any of you still using floppies? Does this worry you that Sony is basically saying sayonara to the actual to floppy drive manufacturer? So love to hear your feedback on that. It's just going to go the same way of the old 5 1/4. Those of you that remember those, it's going to go the way of the dinosaur. All right, those of you that have picked up the new MacBook Pro with the Core i7 installed, wow. The folks over at Australian PC Authority have done a review of the new 17-inch MacBook Pro, and they were running it through some of their tests. And check this out. The CPU is hitting temperatures of over 100 degrees Celsius. Yes, 100 degrees Celsius. Now, I think you can boil water at 100 degrees Celsius. And in order to actually do all the tests that they were doing, they had to take the laptop and sit it up on its side in order to get the chassis to cool off enough to do it. But this is pretty scary. If you are going to buy one of these, I might wait a while. The CPU was running 50 degrees Celsius at idle. And when they were doing some just medium lifting on or medium processing, it went up to 84 degrees Celsius within the space of 2 minutes. And when that happened, the exterior began to heat up significantly. And this thing gets hot. And, you know, I just wonder if you're processing video and when you're really crunching on the processor, what's going to happen? I don't know if they've got a heat issue, but we'll find out pretty quick if the people start failing chips. but 100 degrees Celsius is what they hit during these tests. Of course, they were loading this thing up and doing extreme tests. But when you are processing video or something like that and using all the cores, there's no doubt that the i7 is going to get very hot very quickly. But they were using a Core i7-620M, again, in a 17-inch MacBook Pro, and they couldn't complete all their tests without tipping the laptop on its side. All right, over on Engadget, and boy, I hope this guy gets this app approved. What would you think if you could sync your iPhone via Wi-Fi? To tether it? I hate tethering my iPhone. The only time I tether it is just before I go on a trip. I load it up with a new podcast, and so I'll tether it one time. Maybe I'll tether it once before I go home as well. But I really hate tethering it. But if I could do a Wi-Fi sync, that would be a dream. Well, apparently, there's a gentleman who has built a sync app, and he's going to be submitting it to Apple. Here's what I think is going to happen. I think Apple's going to basically say no. I don't think Apple's going to allow this to go through. If they do, this will be a very popular selling application. He'll make a lot of money on this, because if you don't have to tether it, man, be good. Now, they got a video of it up on YouTube. It's gotten a lot of traffic, and the source of this was over on Wi-Fi Sync. It's actually a YouTube video. I have that linked up in the show notes for you to check out. But I'm excited about the ability to sync via Wi-Fi if Apple will allow it. But I think it's just like so many of these other apps that they won't do it. How many of you bought let me tell you about an iPad camera adapter. Oh yeah, it's coming. Within the next week, there's going to be an iPad camera connection kit. And it also looks like there's going to be, along with it, going to be released the ability to have a plug a memory stick into it as well. Basically, it'll be an adapter, have a memory stick slot. But the video is going to be 640 by 480. And let me look and see if they talk about any other specs on this thing. It's going to be... in its intended role, the adapter works as expected and will add images to the photo app when plugged in. Besides supporting RAW from high-end cameras, the iPad will import any captured photos at full resolution, including EXIF metadata. Video is also supported. The surprising, the iPad will let photo trim video, much as you do with the iPhone 3G. So this just, they don't tell who's going to sell this, though. This is over on Electronista.com. I have a link up, of course, in the show notes. They've got a video on this as well. I think I saw something on either Engadget or Gizmodo talking about the same kit. No word on price on this. I'll see if I can track this down and who this is really going to be by. I think Mac Observer may have had something as well, looking at some of the links on this page. But that's pretty exciting. I think if you'd be able to do Skype calls with this camera kit, with the iPad, man, bonus. I will own one. In a heartbeat, really. That's the main thing missing from the iPad, my consideration. All right, let me go back to this article at the end. And I think, why is that up there? Let me go bring this up. There's a good comparison between Android and iPhone. And, people still say, oh, I'm a Mac user, I'm a Windows user. But there isn't this big, at least I haven't seen it, there isn't this big battle that goes on between, there isn't this scorn and envy. In other words, you're using an Android, that phone sucks. You don't hear too much of that, because Android's a pretty good phone. But there is a article here on O'Reilly Radar that talks about why there really isn't this big, big battle between these two devices. And they got a pretty good write-up here on the platforms and how close they really are, and how that each of the manufacturers are really racing to bring some of the same features to most of the devices. So I have this link up in the show notes if you want to check it out. It's just kind of a little bit of an information type of article. Hey, exciting news. Samsung, the world's top TV maker, is considering developing Google TVs, which run Google Android operating system. Now, we all know that Samsung already, in many of its TVs, have introduced either Vudu or their own platform. But the folks at Samsung say that they are considering developing Google TVs. And basically, all that is, it means that you'll have a regular television set, and inside it will be, it'll be running on Android. This is pretty exciting, because you guys know we're all about the devices right now. Samsung spokesperson said the company is studying Google's TVs and will watch market development, saying Sony's expected as well to introduce its Android-based TV possibly later this year. So what I think is cool about this is that if Raw Voice as a company can develop one app and it'll work on Sony, Samsung, and any other device that incorporates the Android operating system within the television set, aka Google TV, man, I can't wait. Now, LG, they're already doing deals within their Blu-ray players, so they haven't considered yet making Google TV, and maybe part of that reason too is these, it'll be interesting to see how they implement them, because if they truly make them open, then we'll be able to get everything we want on those devices. But if Samsung or LG or Sony tries to really control it and doesn't allow, makes the implementation very painful for companies like ours who are trying to get channels or apps onto those devices, you know, they may be in control, trying to really control the media that goes on. And I can understand it to a certain extent. But if they truly make it open, man, completely levels the playing field, and really what it does is, in a very short order, within a couple of years, every device that's going to come out, every TV, and not only will you be able to watch your regular channels, you're going to be able to do Netflix, you're going to be able to do a Blueberry channel, you're going to be use a Tech Podcast channel, you're going to be able to watch Twit, you're going to be able to watch Revision 3, all these different channels are going to be on there, and man, that just excites me to no end. And plays right into what we're really working hard on our side. So, really, when I don't know if I told you guys this or not, but, well, I don't know if I can say it. Actually, I can't. But I did have an interesting discussion with a big company in regards to some of this discussion. So I have to be quiet for now. But, yes, I have signed an NDA I sent to someone. All right, hey, one of the listeners of the show, please identify yourself, has talked to some folks over at the FTA show. I'm not familiar with these guys. They sent me an invite. I'm going to be doing an interview with them later this week. It's a tech show, and so they're broadcast on satellite. They're doing the internet. All kinds of different stuff, and I haven't listened to their content yet, but I guess someone really talked us up over there. I want to thank you for really supporting the show and being basically a press agent for the show, for a better word, I guess, and that's what helps us continue to build audience share over here. And if this works out all right, I'm going to be probably being a regular featured guest over there on their show. So I'm definitely going to be checking them out and listening to their archives to see what type of content they have. But again, to the listener that really talked us up over there, greatly appreciated. All right, let me go ahead. I got one voicemail for you tonight, and I've got a number of emails. And again, if you have comments on tonight's show, geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline is 619-342-7365. All right, let's go ahead here, and I'll fire off the first one. And let me actually, don't you guys enjoy seeing my bed behind me? Those of you on Ustream, I think this this position is a little better, this camera shot. And all I'm using here, guys, is just a couple standard webcams, Logitech webcam, so the picture ain't too bad. I was working on the graphic overlay or underlay, and I really jacked it up, so I got to work on that over the next couple of days. For those of you that don't know what I'm talking about, I'm talking to the Ustream folks. They're actually seeing the banners and stuff from Geek News Central that I have on the actual screen at this time. And those of you that have joined us late, definitely check out geeknewscentral.com and, of course, subscribe to the show and be part of the Ohana. All right, here's the voicemail that came in. This came actually from Trucker Tom, a submitted audio comment, and we'll see what Tom has to say in his comments here.
Hey, Todd. Tom Wiles here, a.k.a. Trucker Tom. I was listening to your latest podcast, and you were mentioning that a listener, I guess, had emailed you saying that their MacBook, the screen, didn't seem to want to shut off and stay shut off, regardless of what settings that he had set in the control panel. And then you were saying that your MacBook would occasionally, even though the screen was turned off, it would occasionally just kind of come on and then go back off. I've got two MacBooks. I've never seen that kind of behavior out of either one of them. I typically have my machine set to shut the display off after 2 minutes. And then I also use a little free program called Caffeine that you click on the little coffee cup icon up by the clock once it's installed, and that forces it to stay on. Sometimes I like to just have the display on. I don't want it turning off. And then when I'm finished using Caffeine, I simply click the little icon again. The coffee cup goes empty. And then it defaults back to the normal behavior of shutting off after 2 minutes. That's the setting that I have in the control panel. So I'm assuming you must have some software installed on the machine that's trying to access the display somehow. But that's not normal behavior. It should work just like any other laptop. When you set the thing to shut off after so many minutes, it should shut off and stay shut off. Anyhow, great show. Keep up the great work. We'll catch you later.
Hey, Tom, thanks for that. And, you know, really what it is you know, I've never really been bothered by it too much. But I've always had the machine kind of wake up from time to time, and it could be some software on there. Dave Weiner's specific issue was, as he said, he had removed everything that he thought would be waking up the machine, and it still would like periodically flash on and do whatever it was doing and flash off. So I don't know, maybe his and my situation's unique. I didn't go looking for the software causing it, so I'm sure I've got something on there that's doing that. And generally when I have my Mac running, it's usually doing something in the background. Either I'm processing video on it or whatever it may be. So I'm sure that's what's driving the screen to come on from time to time. But I only remember that happened when I was out in Vegas. So it was probably when I was processing video. So it was, you know, probably what drove it. But thanks for the voicemail, and for the audio comment. We'll see if anyone else has any feedback. I got an email here from Lamar. He said, "Hey Todd, I purchased the N drive turn by turn app for $29 a few months ago. It's great and very accurate. I know free is better if the app does work, but I just wanted to point out that the app I have works and it wasn't $99. Great show, Lamar, sent via his iPhone." Lamar, you know what? And the day after that story posted, Google is denying that they are actually building a GPS app for the iPhone. So, you know, that may have been preempted. This may not actually be happening by Google. Google said emphatically that they are not going to be releasing a GPS app for the iPhone. So that's really bad news in my opinion. And maybe Apple just basically told them they wouldn't do it. You know, we may all be stuck for doing that $29 N drive turn-by-turn app. So I have to definitely check that out. Thanks for the feedback on that. Good timing. Got an email here from Frank. He said, "Hey, the people who work there pronounce Drupal as Drupal." All right. I don't know why I call it Drupal. I just do. Drupal rhymes with apple. I met a couple of them quite by accident. Keeping track of the pronunciation of all these made-up words can be quite a challenge. I agree. Thanks, Frank. I got an email from... RW21120. He said, "Hey, Todd, appreciate your tenacity in trying to get my audio comment to play on the show. It was just my reaction to the guy that was having a problem with the missed show. My opinion, he should get a life. Anyway, thanks for all your hard work and dedication. Richard from Virginia and Florida." You know, RW, or Richard, you know something? It's everyone's just passionate about the show. Don't worry. It's all good. You know, when I miss a show, generally it results in emails. And that was no exception last week when I missed, or 2 weeks ago when I missed a show. I got an email here from, hey, Todd, this is Cletus from Georgia again. I'm getting the iPad 3G and was wondering what kind of warranty you think would be best. I don't know if the... if Best Buy has one, they probably do. And I was also looking at Square Trade since they cover drops and spills and stuff. What's your thoughts? Generally, on devices like this, I don't generally buy the extended warranty. I do generally buy extended warranties on, like I bought on my Mac Pro, I bought an extended warranty. Bought the longest one I could buy just because I had wrapped so many dollars up into it. Because what I usually find is if, you know, let's say the device is $499, what is the iPhone 3G going to be cost? It's going to be $600 or $700 at the base price. You're probably, the warranty you're going to get on that for a 3-year warranty is probably going to be $100+ at Best Buy. I don't know what the Apple Care is going to cost on it, $99 maybe. But depending on how you break the screen will depend on whether or not they cover it or not. When I broke my Kindle, I dropped my computer bag on it. So, you know, there was nothing I could really do. So you have to look at the limitations of the warranty, because what's the most expensive thing usually is the screen. I'll leave it up to the audience. Would you guys buy an extended warranty for the iPad 3G? And what do you think he should get? Should he get the warranty from Best Buy? I have used Best Buy's warranties in the past. I have a 60-inch Sony projection screen, and I bought a 5-year extended warranty, and I've used them twice, and I'm actually going to renew the warranty even longer. So it's been good for that. You know, of course, that was at the time a $5,000 television set as well. cough. That's how much I can't even think about paying that much now, but. Got an email from Bruce. He says, "Hey, Todd, just finished listening to episodes 569 while I was flying back from holiday and wondered if your listeners had any details or feedback about the item recently mentioned about using a case with built-in Wi-Fi hotspot with an iPad or similar. Trying to keep some wife acceptance factor and not take my laptop on holiday with me, decided to go with iPhone and use local SIM for data, which worked very well, a $24 Australian dollars for 1 month, 1 gig, but had issues with iTunes not loading large downloads over 3G, even though I had the bandwidth, etc. Do the devices attached to the 3G sharing router see it as a true Wi-Fi, allowing large files from iTunes, such as podcasts?" It should. I appreciate that you could burn through your mobile cap pretty quickly, but local pay as you go options are better than roaming, etc. Here's a little secret, Bruce. If you have a business, get a business EVDO card. No caps, okay? Business EVDO, you may pay a little bit more, but no caps, okay? With Sprint, I didn't tell you that. Or I did tell you that, but you should try that out. Do the device, and I don't know if it works where you're living or not. Anyway, this inquiry was triggered by and will continue to be driven by the uptake of iPads and non-RJ45 capable devices being penalized, as many hotels as most have Wi-Fi make the assumption that you can cable up to register first, accepted that some of these issues may be device-specific, Java-related. Hotels are either going to have to accommodate a new connection model or 3G routing will have to fill this gap. You know what I do in hotels? I carry a router with me. When it's a WAP and also when they'll plug into the wall, that's how I get all my devices connected when I have to pay connection fee. Anyway, you'll get this after I land, as I don't know of any airlines outside the USA brave enough to provide in-flight internet access. We certainly envy that area of the tech from us over in Europe. Keep up the good work, from a longtime listener, Bruce. And hey, no worries. We'll see if we can, you know, get some answers. But I've been using my iPad on Wi-Fi and it just acts like, you know, it gives me all the functionality it does, my iPhone does. Got another email. So you may have been This is actually from Bruce as well. He says, hey, you may have seen my previous post and may have been traveling about a bit, equipped only with the iPhone and made use of McDonald's and other free Wi-Fi where appropriate. Being slightly cynical, I wonder what others' experience were of this free access and just how much of a marketing scam it may be. No matter where connected in Australia, Singapore, Hong Kong, I got worse than dial-up experience even if only customer on site. In fact, dial-up would have been appreciated. In UK, mainly use 3G for this reason. Of course, this is usually after purchase of coffee, food, and their trap has worked, etc. Zero chance of downloading your next podcast while on the road. This begs the question, are there good, bad outlets which listeners can recommend at a chain level, i.e. Starbucks, that actually provide added value by offering Wi-Fi to customers? Sometimes like local picks on iPhone for TripAdvisor, but for Wi-Fi would be good. Suspect the way in which individual experiences vary would make rating a nightmare. They would likely be variants by country use. Vendors cared enough. They would likely be variances by country unless vendors cared enough about their global brand to embrace the services as part of their core business. What has been your experience when you've had cause to use? I never use external Wi-Fi services unless I, happen upon one for free. Because I'm on 3G. That's what I use. But what's everyone else's experience been? How's your, when you've needed Wi-Fi, where have you got it, when it's been good? I'd love to hear feedback for Bruce. Get an email from Scott. He said, I met Scott, and you guys need to check out Haivision. 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 They're up in Canada. He said, hey, Todd, thought you might like to bring this article attention to Ohana. I tend to agree with Stephen Hawking on this one. And Stephen Hawking has made news saying aliens most certainly exist, but humans should make every attempt to avoid them. See article in this link, and he's got an article up on the BBC. Basically, Stephen Hawking has said, hey, if aliens show up, they're going to be here to raid us, eat us, and exploit us. They're not going to be here to help us. And, I think he's on to something there. Got an email from Jim. He says, hey, Boston Comms, big picture, some incredible pictures. And these are some new pictures, Journey to the International Space Station. Very cool. I'll have this link up in the listener show notes. Last email here is from Ken. And he says, hey, I'm listening to show number 56, but I listened to at least one after this. I got a spring break and have not caught up yet. So he asked, what are you listening on and watch on? I must first admit, I think I'm a little cheaper than most. I don't feel the need to pay $20 for cable. That's cheap. Where did you get $20 cable? Sign me up for that. I have the most basic cable, Comcast, they offer. It's called Basic. I used to have Expanded Basic, but irritated by the channels. I like moving to digital. I went the other way and didn't get digital. I was irritated enough with Basic. It's $12.74 a month, but offers a little beyond local channels. They don't even have that offer in Hawaii. My wife and I watch mostly internet, Hulu for the most part. I'm watching different boxes that would beat cable and not have high monthly fees. When I find something, I'll get rid of cable and just use that. I'm using AT&T for internet access, and it works good for watching Hulu. I watch podcasts on my Dell Axiom X51V, Windows Mobile Pocket PC. I've updated the OS a few times. I'm running a WM6.5X. I have an old Sony Ericsson W810i phone. Secondhand, it's a Walkman 2. I have a bunch of music on that, but lost a converter cable to be able to listen to that anymore. That's about it. I'm just looking to stay connected economically with my viewing and listening. Ken, that Vudu, the Roku box, is cheapest one's like $80, $89. And I think it's a great value. I think that great codec. May be a consideration for you there to save some money and get access to content on your big TV screen. All right, buddy, that's it. A little long show here, but the Texas weather is beautiful. It was nearly 80 today when I arrived, and it was beautiful not having to carry a coat to the lower 48 anymore, at least until winter. But if you have comments on tonight's show, geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline is 619-342-7365. I'll hang out here a little bit after the show for those of you on Ustream, but I want to thank everyone else for listening, no matter what device you may be listening on. Share the show with your friends, family members, people that you know, people that you don't. And again, you put on your Wi-Fi devices on your SSID, geeknewscentral.com, and we'll get the word out that way as well. When people are looking for a Wi-Fi connection, they'll see that. But otherwise, everyone take care. And until Thursday, we'll be doing a live show, 8 p.m. Central time is what time I'm going to be kicking off. Again, Thursday, 8 p.m. Central. We'll be live up in Ustream. If you kind of want to watch the show live, that's your chance to do so when I'm in a time zone that's close to yours. So everyone take care. Everyone have a great week. Be good out there. And for those of you that have sent me email here in Texas, I will be in touch. Everyone take care and aloha.